Welcome to FSHD Straight Talk, the podcast where we dive deep into living with FSHD. I'm your host, Tim Hollenbach, and I'm on the journey with you. Having FSHD, I understand the challenges it brings to patients and their families. We're in this together, and this podcast is a space where we swap stories, share advice, and talk to experts to get the latest news. There's plenty to say about living with FSH muscular dystrophy, so let's get straight to it. Welcome all to the FSHD Straight Talk Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Hollenbach. Thanks for being here on another episode. So excited to bring you a great guest today. It's someone from our community, an FSHDer. Her name is Tatiana Garcia, and she's going to come in all the way from San Jose, California. Well, for me, that's all the way from, because I'm in Wisconsin, and it's still kind of cold here and rainy. That's okay. Sometimes the sun comes out. It's not always negative. But San Jose sounds like a nice warm place. So we're going to talk about that and talk about her life. Talk about her goals, her future, the things that she's working towards. She's a young person, so early onset is definitely going to be a topic we're going to cover as well. And, of course, the positive, negative side of the disease. She shares so many good insights, quick tidbit insights. You need to pay attention. Hone in your ears on this. Things that my takeaways is she uses the term fierce in a way that I've never thought about this disease. And about the needs we have. She talks about how FSHD society for her is a positive, is almost like a filter. It filters out some of the bad people. And they get recognized easier because of the disease as compared to the ones that really support her and that she needs in her life. I found that remarkable. I've never heard that before. Excellent insight from different point of view, which is kind of the purpose of the podcast. If you want to get on the podcast, please make sure you email me, fshdradio@fshdsociety.org. The podcast is anywhere you can find it, including YouTube and Spotify. Please listen to any past episodes. I also love to hear if you want to cover any topics we haven't covered yet. Love to have you do that. And of course, I thank the FSHD Society for help supporting this podcast and the great crew behind the scenes that helps land some guests and get the show up and going. And all the great things that they do to help support it, I always appreciate it for sure. And to you, the community, for listening. We're going, you know, well farther into the years I've done this. I think now it's going to be about 9-ish years, 100 some episodes. And as the show has evolved, I've said it recently that I love it. I love that FSHD Straight Talk has now become more about the community. And as I mentioned there, today's guest, Tatiana Garcia from San Jose, California, brings in some great insight. So I'm really excited to bring the interview to you. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Tatiana. Hi, everyone. I've got some exciting news for you from the FSHD community. If you've ever felt the unpredictability of FSHD or wish there was more accurate research and information out there, and I know you have, then listen up. I'm thrilled to tell you about Better Life FSHD, a groundbreaking new research platform from the FSHD Society that's changing the game for those of us living with FSHD. Better Life is your one-stop hub for tracking symptoms, accessing personalized resources like articles and videos relevant to you. And the best part, as you take surveys and track your symptoms, you provide FSHD researchers with better data to understand this complex, understudied disease. And a better understanding can lead to faster treatments, something every one of us can get behind. So head over to betterlifefshd.org and join the study. It only takes a minute to get signed up. Together, we can change the future for everyone affected by FSHD. I've done this. It's a simple process. I challenge you to do the same. Again, that's betterlifefshd.org. Now let's get back to the show. As promised, we have our fantastic guest here, another person from our FSHD community who's reached out, as I have alluded to in the beginning there, Tatiana Garcia, coming all the way from, you said, is it San Jose, California, right? Okay, so I'm in Wisconsin,
Oh,
And
wow.
I am envious of people that are on the West Coast. So, what's the weather like right now?
Right now it's cold. It's really bipolar. It goes hot in the cold and then hot in the cold.
Okay. But what's like your cold? What is your definition of that?
Oh, 60.
Oh my
Yeah.
gosh, that would be like great spring weather here. That'd be fantastic.
What's your cold?
Our cold? Let's see. The worst, like extreme colds in like January, even February, is could get like negative digits, like negative 10.
Oh God.
Yeah. Like you're going outside, you can only be out there for about 5 minutes or your skin starts to hurt. Yeah. Oh, it's
Yeah,
terrible.
it'll just survive.
Yeah. And the winters seem to drag and they're dark, of course, because of the less, sunlight during that time and all that. So it does, it's something to get used to if you're not from the Midwest or from a cold area. You definitely have to be creative of how to get your sunlight or how to keep your spirits up. Yeah, it's tough. So yeah, so San Jose. I've never been to San Jose. Been to where have I been down there? Like LA area a little bit, I think once or twice, and then San Francisco, been in there. But never San Jose.
Let's go.
Yeah. Oh, you've been there?
Yeah, it's right below it. Yeah.
Oh, it is. Okay, so it's not far. That's what I was going to ask about. How far away is that? Okay, so you're a little more south.
Yeah, it's around the bay.
Okay. Nice. Excellent. And how long have you lived there? Did you grow up there?
Yeah, my whole life.
Whole life. And that kind of leads us to that like first question for you, Tatiana. You have FSHD. Why don't you start there? Like, tell us your FSHD story, as I love to do with our guests.
Okay. I was in elementary school. It was right before middle school, and I was previously diagnosed with something called Mobius syndrome, and that is where your facial muscles are paralyzed. But for that, there is a surgery, and it can be helped. And so I was misdiagnosed with that my whole life, and when I hit around fifth grade, my mom had noticed some stranger things. For example, my shoulders are poking out, and oh, there was a turning point, and it was when we were outside the dentist's office. And I was walking and I fell. And in order to get up, I thought it was normal at the time. I didn't really think there was anything wrong. But in order to get up, I had to kind of crawl to a car to push myself off of it. And I just remember like staring at my mom, and she was like, her face, like she knew something was wrong.
Probably. Yeah.
He went to a specialist and they got diagnosed on the spot.
So being misdiagnosed for a number of years, it sounds like, because did it affect the facial muscles for you first? It sounds like.
Yes, ever since I was a baby, I couldn't smile or make facial expressions. And at first, my mom was scared, but when they diagnosed me with that, she kind of calmed down.
And has the progression in the facial muscles, has it plateaued at all, or has it become, consistently more?
No, I'm really grateful that it has plateaued.
Yeah, I think that's like I think what we all hope for, right? Like if those like plateau spots are as long as possible, but it's unpredictable, right? Yeah. Now with being a young person being diagnosed, I can't relate to that. Because I wasn't diagnosed till I was like 40. So I had quite a run there without having to know what it was, even though I think some of the things you even talk about, like getting out, putting on my jacket or the certain movements, because for me it was more in the shoulder, the shoulders. And I get it. Like people kind of just thought that's the way you do things. And then you start to realize it's not, normal as we have kind of said. So it's like those like answers certain questions. Did you feel any relief even as a young age that you at least had a proper, it felt like diagnosis or direction?
I think in other circumstances I would have, but the way my family reacted as if they were mourning, I just felt guilty.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's interesting. So the reaction of the family, I think you used the right word. I think a lot of people experience that even for themselves when they're diagnosed, and not necessarily just with FSHD, like a lot of things. There's a state of what you thought you are, or what you were going to, what your life was going to be. And like you mourn that, and that like change is the only way I think you can describe it. And so was their reaction of that morning, was that just all encompassing? Was it like really overtaking?
I think it was a little bit because for a while I didn't accept that I needed help with things because with my FSHD it was highly progressed, like right when I got diagnosed and went downhill. And I refused a wheelchair or more help because I didn't want it to be real.
Yeah. It's like a state of denial, right?
Exactly.
Right. Or did you even get a sense of like, 'cause this is where I'm at. I know at some point if my legs get to that degree of 'cause they are weakening for sure, having to rely on equipment, there's this, and I'm like, I'm very present of like that thought and like, what am I feeling when I think about when that moment comes? I keep going back to like, it feels like I'm accepting defeat. Yeah.
Exactly. I was around 13 when I knew I was gonna have to use a wheelchair in the future, and all I can feel was weak. It would take something from me. And I started using a wheelchair in college, and honestly, it was the best decision of my life. Like, it opened so many doors for me just because I can actually go places now.
Yeah, it gives you that like sense of normalcy or freedom, right? That others have to move around the world. This just happens to be with equipment, and you'd think it'd be more socially acceptable as we've moved forward. You find it is or it isn't in your, viewpoint of using the power equipment.
I think it's more socially acceptable. However, that doesn't cut out all the ignorance people have. I think most of the time when I go outside, I have 20 million people staring at me at once because I'm young and I'm not someone you would expect to be in a wheelchair. And I have people who ask me what happened to my legs openly. And people who, teachers, for example, who don't keep the door open for classes. And I think there's just this bubble where people who use wheelchairs are kind of on the outside because not everything is meant for wheelchair users. It's hard, and but it's not impossible.
Yeah. But it takes more time, right? Everything then does. The
Every
planning, when you have to leave, right? Being on time and all those things, those extra stresses that the average person would just be like, oh, I'm just gonna get up, throw a coat on, and out the door I go. It's not
Yeah.
like that, there's a lot of adjustments. And then how long did it kind of take you to make that adjustments, in like your routine of life and like adapting to this?
I think, I don't know if this is abnormal or not, but I was kind of already adjusted. It was kind of a no-brainer. For example, how I put up my ponytail, I would rest against the wall, or when I'm showering, I would clean my hair like that. And in order to break, I would sit down on a bench and then get up and go again. And it was kind of just how I lived.
Yeah, it's like it's a, the adaption becomes normal, right? Like the way I see it is, the body will self-organize the best it can. So if you give it a task, it'll figure out how to do that. You're right, like with like washing hair or yeah, like for me, like getting to the top of my head, right? It's all the one hand assists the other, right? And accepting the help on like the larger things, I do though find that I got good advice from someone. It was actually a guest on this podcast, one of the first ones, like the fourth or fifth episode. And they said, you know, don't deny someone the opportunity to help you if they ask. Like, you're taking that from them. Like, they might want that. Because there is that, not to make it like a selfish, it's all about them who's helping you, but they do get a chemical reaction to help people, like a positive one. And like, there's nothing wrong with that. That's how we're built. And like, to deny them that. So I always try to remember that, you know, if people ask, I always still find it's more about defeat. So kind of like, where do you lie in your sense of when someone offers help to help you? You know, do you find yourself, oh, I don't want to deny them the help? Or do you find yourself like, no, I got this. You know, you don't want to be like that sense of defeat. Like, which side would you go to?
I think I'm very, I forgot the word for it, but when I was in middle school, I had, because it was harder to walk, I had this one case manager. She was the kindest person I've ever met, and she taught me to self-advocate fiercely. And with that, you're always asking for help. You're asking for people to adapt to you. And I think, especially with school or work or just living with people, like a roommate, you have to be fierce about your needs or it's not going to get done.
I love that term. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't find any defeat in that.
I am totally writing that down. Fierce about your needs, you said. Yeah, like that's something that kind of stands out to me. You know, like I always try to do that, like trying to find those nuggets from our fantastic guest, such as yourself. The term feast or fierce kind of sticks out to me because it's got a little bit of an edge to it, right? Like it's like a concentration. It's an ultimate like focus point on that about your needs. Is there like a situation that you could kind of pull back from like your memory where, you know, maybe this is a two-part question. One is like some moment where you felt like, dare I say it, like FSHD was almost a positive. And then there's a moment maybe where it felt like you were just ready just to jump out of your own skin, just could not handle, you know, dealing with this any longer. Like the two opposite extremes of this.
Well, it can be horribly negative if you let it snowball. If you let it build momentum about everything you can't do, and that happens all the time, it's just about fighting it. Like yesterday, for example, I had an interview with a behavioral center for autistic children.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I want to do when I'm older. And so it was an entry position. I thought my resume was good and the interview as well, but she asked me how would I basically be able to do it if I'm in a wheelchair,
mm-hmm.
because sometimes you have to grab the kids and stop them from hurting other people, and she basically offered me a job that was easier, and it was organizing activities, like cutting out papers and stuff like that.
And
I just had this moment where I didn't want to be me anymore, because that meant no matter how smart I am or how many achievements I have, sometimes people aren't going to think that I can do things. Mm-hmm. And that's hard to not let build up.
Mm-hmm. That's difficult. And it's fresh, it sounds like, right?
Yeah.
Like, it just happened. So, Yeah, it's like, because you mentioned this was before we hit record, but like what you're going to school for, would you mind sharing that, since you brought up, you know, it doesn't matter how smart you are, because you are, you're extremely intelligent because of what you're pursuing. So could you share that with everybody?
Yeah, okay. Right now, currently, I'm working on my associate's in paralegal studies and my bachelor's in psychology in order to get my... It's a clinical psychology in neuropsychology.
Neuropsychology. That is fantastic. I mean, then that's going to be a road. I mean, you know, it's going to be difficult. And so I could sense, yeah, that even as you explained it in a job interview, like there's always going to be this barrier, right? It doesn't matter. It's just always going to be there. And some people will see it as it's a larger barrier than others, or even what bothers me, it seems like that person saw it as a larger barrier than you do. But it's you. It's your body. It's your, you know, your capabilities. But they judged what they thought you could or could not do on that job. Granted, they know the job better, perhaps, right, than you would, because you have never worked it. But to have like that foregone conclusion, like, we're just going to offer her this, and I'm sure she'll take it. And almost maybe she thought, and I'm obviously only speculating here, that it was easier for you, so that she was doing you a favor.
Yeah, it felt like at the moment. I don't like thinking the worst of people, but that moment really just, it was a horrible moment for me. I left feeling so defeated.
So where was it left? As you left, have they contacted you again? Or did you leave it hanging? Or where are we at with it?
No, she said that they would contact me today with anything if they want to go forward. But if they do not, then they do not.
And they're passing. Okay. Been there. That's tough. It's a tough waiting game for sure, especially if you really want the job.
Yeah.
So that's like the extreme negative, very, very fresh. How about like, were you...
Said
like, wow, if I'm, you know, I've said it like about this podcast, for instance, like I've done podcasts prior, not nearly as rewarding for sure as this. And I would not have this. I would not meet you, Tatiana, if I didn't have FSHD. You know what I'm saying? So it's almost a positive.
Yeah, I have a lot of those moments too, because I'm lucky enough to be surrounded now around amazing people who love me. And I sometimes am so happy that I am disabled, because without that, I wouldn't have met amazing people. It's like a sifter. Like, it sifts out all the bad people, all that mean people who wouldn't want to be friends with you because of this. And then you're left with amazing people.
Like you said, a sifter, a filter system, so to speak. It kind of brings out the bad in people so you can dismiss them, right? You don't want that in your life, that like negativity, but it'll kind of bring the positive ones that maybe will be more important to you, more meaningful relationships, kind of rises to the top then.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Love that too. That's an interesting perspective. Never thought of it that way. I think that like, Was there any like stage within the progression of the disease though, where I'm like trying to describe this in like the proper phrasing, you know, as a question, because from my experience, and once again, you're younger than I am. I was diagnosed later in life than yourself, so there's a little bit of a, it doesn't completely line up. However, but you know, there's a lot of people that know what I have. I'm very forefront about it. And a lot of them know, like since the diagnosis. So I'm 49, will be 50 this year, devastatingly 50 this year. And you know, so it's like that's a good amount of time. And I feel like sometimes people forgot that I have this.
Oh God, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's good. You know what I mean? I guess it can be good because you're treated normal, but it's also not. You know, I don't. Yeah, it's like hard for me to like express that sense I get. So I guess I'm looking for you for help on that one, Tatiana.
I know that your disability doesn't define you, and that's not who you are, but it is a big part of who you are.
Right.
When people ignore that, it feels like they don't see you. And when you find people who see you, it's the best feeling in the world. And why wouldn't you want them to see you? And for me personally, growing up, a lot of people in my family did not treat me like I was disabled. They kind of forgot that it was really difficult for me to do things. Mm-hmm. But that made me appreciate the people who did so much more.
Yeah, I think that's goes back to your filter system, right? A little bit in that regard. Yeah, it kind of filters those people out. And then I notice, you know, and this might have happened more when your, let's call it limitations, lack of a better term, just like me, like my limitations are increasing, you know, can do less. But I find that there are some people, and I almost want to call them, I kind of nickname them in my own head, like a guardian type person.
Mm-hmm.
I'll use an example. And I don't know if this person listens to the podcast. He doesn't have FSHD. He knows I do this, but I am a baseball coach for a high school organization. And as you probably know, you're a young person. When you get on, if you have to go to an event, you get on the school bus,
mm-hmm.
even the coach. And those are pretty hefty steps.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so glad they have a handrail. So, but I've noticed, not last year, but this year, it's my second year doing it with this person, that he consciously, like, lets me go first. He wants to be behind me. I think he's thinking, if I fall, right, need that extra support. And I get the sense that he doesn't want me to catch on, that that's what he's doing, you know, because he doesn't want that awkwardness and all that. So that's why I kind of nickname it like a guardian. Like, they're almost like hovering as like a, just in case, like, I'm here, you know. He won't ask, hey, you need help or anything like that. It's like he's almost wondering, like, if I need to slip in, I will. Now, he used to be a police officer, so I think that's part of his background. But it's like, do you get a sense of people like that, you know, throughout your journey of this, that are kind of those type of personalities?
Yeah, I just want to say, I think that's really beautiful. That's really cute. I think that's what I mean by it brings out the best people. Like, you really get to see what kind of people are just there.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up with I was the only child for 16 years, and so, but I had a lot of cousins.
Yeah.
One of them, her name's Serena. I live with her now. She, without me having to ask her, she was always there to help me. I remember this one specific time. In high school, I used to be really embarrassed of how I walked. Mm-hmm. And there was this one time I had to walk over Tan Bark. And that's more difficult to walk on because it's not steady.
Right.
And as I was walking, I just felt like everyone was watching me. You know, the normal teenager stuff. And I just felt her get behind me, and she covered, like, she was just standing behind me to, like, cover me.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's quite an instinct, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that other people wouldn't see, to kind of give you that, like, let her do her thing. And you're right, high school's tough. You're not far removed from that life, and that it's very judgmental. Trying to fit in, all those stresses. So I personally can't imagine what that was like to go through high school with this added pressure. It sounds like and looks like you've come out of it well, a great educational path you've set for yourself, and you have goals. Awesome. Was high school tough, would you say, or was it as close to normal as you could get for your experience?
It was horrible. I failed 2 years of high school, and I had to make up all my credits within 1 year in order to graduate on time. And I was mainly missing school because I had so much anxiety revolving around people and them basically just knowing I'm disabled.
Mm-hmm.
So I just sadly didn't go.
Yeah,
but
avoided.
Yeah. Exactly. I avoided everything because I was embarrassed. And I think college kind of helped with that because most of the time I'm not worried about how people see me. I'm just trying to get to class.
Hmm. That's a total segue that you just did perfectly, by the way. That was going to be my next question. Like, what's then the differences for you so far from high school to college?
Yeah, with college, people are still really, like, I know people say in college it's better because they're not children.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of adults are still mean.
Yeah, right.
Right. Just, yeah.
Yeah.
But, I have met a lot of nice people, and I am more independent now, and I think that's a big part of my life, being independent. I have more motivation with college than I ever did with high school.
So that's like the biggest factors, right? Maybe there's still mean people exist, but the focus changes. Now you must have the still, I mean, the first thing I thought of when I know you went through the struggles with high school, I can relate to that. I had similar issues, but not because of the reasons. The reasons were different. But to pound out that many credits in such a short time, you clearly, you know, have the drive. I mean, you have a work ethic. There's I don't think that can be denied if you had to tackle that situation. Did you end up meeting then that goal, graduating on time as you wanted? Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's fantastic. The cynical side of me says, why can't we all just do that? Why can't we just cram it into Let's just get it over with.
After that, I kind of just never wanted to do normal school and just like.
Yeah.
But on the credit, the making up credits, I don't know if it's the same everywhere, but in California, they have online credit rebuilding, and it's called like Ingenuity, or there's another one, but it's not great for learning. It's not.
Yeah.
And that's the difference with high school and college. With high school, I wanted to get over it. With college, I want to learn.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a big difference. High school felt like survival, not necessarily educational. And when you get to college, it's, you know, I only spent 1 year in college and realized what I was studying was not my thing and never really found my thing. But I give always people credit for either, you know, hitting it right away out of high school and continuing their path, or maybe they pause it, they do something else, they go back. Like my wife was a returning college student and, you know, graduated. And I just find that so admirable. Like people do that at any point of their life. It's because it's not easy. It's supposed to be difficult. So with the field that you have decided to go to, is there an inspiration of why you chose that? Because it sounds like, right, you talked about working with kids. That would be a goal. Mental health is sprinkled in there. Is there a reason why?
It's more, I took a psychology class in high school, and I knew right then that I wanted to do that. But I dive more into different fields of psychology. And most of psychology is helping with mental health. However, neuropsychology is more focused on neurological disorders like Alzheimer's and autism. And yes, working with kids would be great, but I also want to work with elderly people. And I chose that not only because I want to help, but because I love studying it. I love learning about the brain, and I knew I could do that.
Has there been a class so far that you really love, and one did you really hate?
Oh, I hated calculus. I hated calculus. I hate math.
Yeah.
I can't. It's so hard. I really loved my public speaking class. It's really informative.
So you like that. Yeah, that kind of, I think I'm in the same boat. When I was in my little year of college, there was a public speaking, you know, course. And I remember being a terrible college student walking in, I think it was like maybe the first couple of weeks, and plopping down and, you know, ready for class to start. And then the first sentences out of the teacher, professor, whatever his mouth was, okay, I hope everybody's then prepared today. We're going to start our speeches. And I went, we were supposed to have a speech today? Uh-oh. So I had like nothing. And of course, I was like the third person called.
Oh, God.
To figure out what I was going to talk about. And it was a short one. So it was going, you know, it's the first one. I think it was like had to be under 3 minutes. So it was really short. Like that sometimes is more difficult, you know, like get to the point, right? And I had to figure out what I was going to say for the during the first two people talking. And then from the time I had to get up from my seat to get to the front of the room, I ended up getting a good score, But it taught me like, hey, right, be prepared, pay attention. This is on you now, you know, that kind of thing. But it also made me feel like I was pretty confident. Like once I started to talk about what I wanted to talk about, never really thought to pursue that as a career, but I enjoyed it. Did you find then that you enjoyed the public speaking side? Like, was there like a rush you got from it, from doing it, learning about it?
My teacher actually said that the most improvised speeches are the best ones. So I think you got lucky there.
How lucky there.
I really love my teacher. She was so kind and helpful and interested. And that's so hard to find. Like someone who's really interested in people. And she made learning about public speaking fun. Like she made me excited to give a speech, and I hate speaking in front of people. But my first speech, I was talking about my cousin Serena because it was about someone who you love and all their good qualities. And I remember everyone kept saying like they love my speech and I was so funny. And after that, I just like loved it, obviously, because of all the affirmations. And yeah.
Yeah. Oh, you're successful, right? You're like, hey, I can do this. This isn't so hard. But yeah, most people don't, you know, a lot of people have that phobia of standing in front of people and, you know, talking. And I was asked to do a couple different speaking things, even one for my nonprofit job. And I'm like, okay. And my boss was like, well, but you do a podcast. I go, yeah, that's not public speaking. You know, I'm talking to Tatiana. That's it. We're just having a conversation. It's like I'm not talking to the whole room of people, you know. So there is that different element, right? The eyes on you, you know, don't stumble, make sure you're making sense, and like the rush of the negative kind of can come in, right? So even like in your using that as my next question, like that rush of negativity, like how do you you know, combat that in your life?
I cry it out a little bit. I'm a really big crier. I think my partner always makes fun of me for crying too much in like a lighthearted way. But I'm a big like believer that if you cry a little bit, it will come out, and then you just need to pick yourself back up and keep going. I cry a little bit and I hug someone. I love hugging people. I hug someone and then I just try to remind myself that I can sit here and cry all day.
Mm-hmm.
And the world will keep going, or I can get back up and do what I need to do.
Mm-hmm. So crying is that release,
yes,
right? And then the hug is that connection.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like grounding.
Ah, yeah.
Like someone's here with you, someone loves you. You're gonna be okay.
And then, because yeah, you know, because I was always more the negative person. Still, kind of am, to be honest with you. I've said this before. Like I always lean to more of the pessimistic. Oh, you know, dread and so forth. I try to surround myself with more positive people. You know, so you kind of attract that energy more to you. Is advice I got from my brother. Well, and then you got to go against the grain and kind of get people into your tribe that are a little bit different than you, and like so forth, which is kind of hard to do because usually you attract kind of what you are. And, but I always found that like positive people are like, they're just delusional, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're like, gee whiz, everything's fine, but it's not, you know? So it's not necessarily like what people might describe like a Pollyanna positive, or I call it like a false positive, right? I mean, you're being real with yourself when you're working through and doing your process, right? To try to be more positive.
I think the worst thing you can do in the world is be negative and tell yourself you're just being realistic. Because realistically, outcomes can go one way or another. You don't know how they're going to turn out. You have maybe an idea, but that's your own idea. I think being negative and saying it's realistic is setting yourself up for failure. It's important to be realistic, but not in a mean way. I tell myself, it's going to be difficult because I'm disabled, but that doesn't mean I can't do it because I'm disabled.
You just say it'll just be a challenge.
Exactly.
So the negative is it's a challenge. The positive, you can do it anyway.
Exactly.
That's a good lesson, right? Do it anyway. Yeah, I mean, that's even why I try to tell myself to go do some type of exercise. It hurts anyway, so I might as well do it, right? I'm always sore. So what's the difference? It's more of motivation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with the disease takes us, you know, always to that like physical, you know, road right away. People see it as us having this physical disability. And I've asked this to a lot of people I've had on in past episodes. It's like, for you, Tatiana, like, what do you think is more difficult, the physical side of FSHD or the mental or emotional side that comes with it? Yeah, I put you on the spot on that one.
I think it always has to be the physical.
Yeah.
Because some days it's so hard to get up alone. It's so hard to, maybe if you fall, you can't get up. It's hard to go places by yourself because you're scared. That's the worst part of it. The not being able to take care of yourself fully. The mental part will always be there. Like, it will come with everything, but I think it's the actual physical part.
Interesting. You're not that I'm tallying it, but you're one of the few that have said physical, to be honest. And I think that maybe speaks to more of your mental game, right? Approach to the disease, that I think you have already a plan, so to speak, to kind of work through those moments with the crying hug. We talked about that. That's like really valuable.
Yeah, I think mentally there's a million more problems I have than this. This is just my life. This is who I am and what I'm going to have to deal with for the rest of it. So, I mean, I'm more worried about school.
There's other things. Yeah, yeah. You mentioned earlier when you talked about your, you know, family finding out and their mourning period, and you used the word that you had guilt that went along with that. Since we're kind of talking about the mental side of the disease too here, I kind of wanted to ask that, like, why did you feel guilty?
Because I was making my mom cry, or my diagnosis was. And my mom is such a strong woman. Like, she's been through the worst that anyone can ever imagine, and she never cries. She never lets me see her cry. That was always a big thing growing up. And in that moment, she was crying. And I just felt so, like, guilty.
It felt like that you probably broke her, right? I mean, that's reasonable to feel that way. Did you ever, like, address that with her, like, your feelings to it and kind of work that, or no?
Sometimes, but my mom's not a very emotional woman. She's very strong, yes, but emotional.
No, right? Yeah, I can kind of relate. Yeah, you can get the hugs once in a while.
Yeah.
You like the connections, right? But you're not having this big, deep discussion about feelings, right? Yeah, I have that in my family as well. It makes it kind of tough. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I got a couple questions left for you, but one, too, is I definitely want to hit on is, you know, a little bit of your future. Like, where do you want to be? You're going through school. You're in the trenches with this. I have no doubt that you'll come out the other side. And when you do, what do you want to do?
I want to work in a hospital setting, just assessing and helping people with neurological disorders, or, you know, if life takes me another way, I maybe want to go to law school.
Oh, Oh, that's interesting. That'd be cool. So that's gonna be tough though, right? I mean, that's like a whole nother dimension.
Yeah, but I like school. It's not, I'm not amazing at it, but I like school. And I'm interested in paralegal work, and if that leads me somewhere else, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I think those are interesting directions. The psychological side of what you're interested in, and then paralegal law, you know, gets kind of matter of fact to some degree, right? I mean, that's pretty wild. But I know you'll figure what you want and to get that right fit, and wherever that leads, I think you're going to help a lot of people. And it sounds like that's probably one of your goals, right? It's like helping people within what you do.
Yeah, I think that, I don't know. I've always liked helping people. Like, I remember when I was younger, there was this older lady having a difficult time bringing in groceries from her cart to her car. And I'm weak at this point, like, I'm barely walking, but I don't know, I just felt so bad that I had to help her.
Very
And
instinctual.
yeah, exactly.
I think that's a great trait. I think a lot of people would just pass that person by, right? And they would say, I don't want to interfere. They'll figure it out. And that's not you. That's what I think is interesting. You know, then I think that kind of will correlate with what you do as a profession. You know, you're not going to deny those instincts. The final question is then, you know, we've had people on talk about the early onset chapter that we kind of have, or group, that is fighting very hard to make sure they're not forgotten when it comes to any type of clinical trials, treatments. Now you're 19, so you kind of fall within the adult side, granted, but early onset, you qualify in there. You're diagnosed young. For the people that, you know, can relate to that, I can't. But you know, what advice do you give to the young person, if it's elementary school or high school or even college, right? It's that young age where they're getting the news of this diagnosis. What advice would you give them?
Don't isolate yourself because you think it's hard for people to accept you, because you're going to find people who do, and they're going to be amazing. You just have to look for them.
That's, once again, fantastic advice. I love it. I love it. So don't be alone. Get involved with things, people. And I think that even the evolution, not to plug FSHD Society necessarily directly here, but, you know, just find even groups. That's one way. I guess I lied. There's one more question. Where do you find then, like, your groups, even if they're not within the people that you see every day? Like, is there like social media that you use as well?
Not really. I stick close to the people, I have. Mm-hmm. My cousin, her boyfriend, their baby, and my, wife.
Awesome. Awesome. So you have a good nucleus.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You have all that working, in your direction. That's fantastic. That's fantastic. Well, thanks, Tatiana, for joining us. I felt like we only just scratched the surface, but we can have you on again, of course, because we want to see the progression of your career too. I want to see what Tatiana is like after college, maybe. Like, hey, what are we doing, right? That'd be fantastic. So, yeah, thanks for joining us, reaching out. Tatiana is one of the people that have listened to the podcast, watched it, and then reached out to me on the email side of things to kind of set something up. So it does happen. I do that and get the community on. So thanks, Tatiana, for coming on and being courageous to share your story with us.
No problem. I hope you have a good day.
You too. That is Tatiana Garcia, all the way from San Jose. I love California. I do. For the weather. I don't know about some of the other stuff. A lot to deal with. Fires, etc. I digress. Having her on was fantastic. A lot of takeaways. A lot of takeaways. Can you guess? The main one for me is the fierce, man. The fierce. Fierce about what you need. You know? I mean, we don't want to be super selfish, but fierce isn't that. It's just very targeted. It's very, like, on track. It's very, it could be aggressive even. I loved when she has that, talking about her support system, her cousin, cousin's spouse, their baby, her wife, the partner in her life, that person that she has. Amazing. Love it all. And I think that's the lesson that I take away from this conversation, is a young person diagnosed early on, going through college, like anybody else that is Tatiana's age, that has that interest, that has that drive. She has the same drive. I've said this on a past episode. The things that you put in front of yourself, the things that you wanted to do, the goals before your diagnosis, or maybe within the early parts of your diagnosis, is still you. That's still what you want to do. I feel like Tatiana is encompassing that. She is showing us that through example, like so many of you do, that I'm going to carry on anyway. I found her very positive, almost sneaky positive. You know, she wasn't giving us like a line of, like I said, Pollyanna positive sentences here or some type of cliche. She's kind of living the positive, thinking about the physical. That's kind of the downside. She feels like the positive, she's like, there's more to worry about. So I don't really worry about that. I think that's impressive. So she reached out to me via email. You can do the same thing as well. FSHDradio@fshdsociety.org is my email address. I definitely want to hear from you if you want to talk about a certain subject we haven't talked about. I had someone reach out about that and went back and forth with that person. That was good dialogue there. So I welcome those things. And then hopefully we can roll in some of those topics. If you want to be a guest on the show, or maybe connect with someone and tap them on the shoulder and say, hey, maybe you want to email this guy and see if you can share your story on this podcast. I'd love to hear from you. This FSHD Straight Talk podcast is about the community. We'll touch on the science, definitely keep you up to date if something live, local, late breaking happens. But let's face it, you're going to know about it probably before you heard it on the podcast. And so we really want to kind of target into the people, boots on the ground, people that are working, yes, to help us find a treatment, cure, et cetera. People working hard, the volunteers around us that are working hard to raise those funds, to raise that awareness. And of course, you, the community that live with this disease every day, including the caregivers and loved ones with you. So that's what I want to target as guests going forward. So feel free to do that. Be a guest on the show. Send me those emails. Fill up the inbox. Love to hear from you. Also follow the show. Please do that. Follow it, watch it, listen wherever you can. Share it. That to me is the biggest thing. Share the show with others if they don't know about it. I actually get a lot of those emails is, I never heard of your show. I'm just now catching up. And I think we're well into the hundreds of episodes and they've been great. And that's okay if you got to catch up. But share it, right? We don't want to leave anybody behind and get everybody involved. This is more of a community-based thing. We need the community. So thanks again for listening and watching the show. And we'll see you next time on the FSHD Straight Talk podcast. Take care.